from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to talk about a natural compound that doubles cancer survival rates. This is from Vigil Hospital in Denmark, and we have about 14 other studies. Again, we select the studies from around the world, all from quality, respected institutions published in peer-reviewed literature that the mainstream media has not touched. So it's all brand new information for you. Then I'm going to do part three of our ongoing series. Hopefully I might be able to finish it today on autism made in the USA and the irrefutable proof from the scientific literature that vaccines cause brain damage, including autism. And we'll be citing the actual studies, and I've also been citing the ways that the CDC and the FDA and the vaccine industry have colluded together to prevent this information from becoming common knowledge. Then we're going to go to your phone calls. I don't know how many we can take. It depends upon the questions you're raising and how long a good answer takes. And then I'm going to play you a clip from a person who is fighting back in Oregon about the new laws that they're proposing that every single baby that's delivered, when you get home with your baby, you must have a visit from one of the city officials. They must examine your home, where the baby's sleeping, and also that's the first visit. Second visit is a nurse trying to convince you the power of all the vaccines. No matter how many they want to give, you should take them without questioning. And then third, what happens if you challenge them on any level, and what will be the outcome? Well, then suddenly protective services come in, you're designed to be an unfit parent, your baby is taken away and put into foster care. And by the way, Oregon has one of the first or second worst foster care situation in America. It's happening now, and it's planned for all 50 states. And look behind the scenes and look at ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, about 200 to 300 corporations who work with your state legislators to pass their bills as laws, and yet they never show up. But we are exposing them. So this is taking away our rights, parental rights, and it's making us live in a police state. And I realize a lot of people love the nanny state. Well, don't think you're going to like what's going to happen, but I'm going to give you some things that fly right in the face of the Constitution that are proven unconstitutional. These are not my opinions. These are proven unconstitutional. And where's the Me Too movement on taking back our rights? So, all that plus my guest in the last part of our program would be Dr. Brian Hooker. And Brian's son was vaccine damaged. And they went after him when he exposed the corruption, the malfeasance, the lies inside of the CDC. And how did we find all this out? One of the CDC's top scientists, Dr. William Thompson, was speaking at length repeatedly to Brian. Brian saw that what he was telling him was just crimes against humanity, so he recorded it. And only after this recording went to a Representative Posey in Florida, the fact that African-American boys had a over 224% increase in autism spectrum disorder if they were 36 months or younger, did this become public knowledge. To this day, the pharmaceutical industry has so much power over Congress that it's prevented Posey from bringing that doctor from the CDC in to testify under oath to expose the entire corruption of the CDC from top to bottom. Brian wrote an article, and it was published, but then pressure was brought upon the publication to rescind the article. They did. Now that article has been republished, and with new and more devastating information. He was honest and accurate. They were not. So that's what we're talking about today. We began with the latest on health. A new study on Anatto, A-N-N-A-T-T-O, sourced delta tocotrienols. Now, these are compounds containing vitamin E, and it's shown incredible results for extending the life of ovarian cancer patients. It is a stunning finding that should be hailed as a major breakthrough, but don't expect to hear much about it from the medical establishment. And you can put your own reasons why in. The study found that delta tocotrienols, toco, T-O-C-O, tri, T-R-I-N-O-L, E-N-O-L, tocotrienol, used in combination with Avastin, was able to stabilize and control ovarian cancer after surgery by 50% at 6 months. And yet, when Avastin was used by itself, it was only 25%. So this natural non-toxic substance, delta tocotrienol, used in combination, doubled the survival of ovarian cancer patients after surgery. And I don't want to overemphasize, but I want to be emphatic of how groundbreaking this study is. Now, there have been studies of on the anti-cancer effects of certain nutrients, but these are generally smaller in scale and used animal or in vitro models. Never before has the ability of a nutrient to significantly prolong survival in cancer patients been demonstrated in a study of drug-level quality. And further, the authors of the study are, you know, very up on this. So, good news to help those suffering from ovarian cancer to survive longer. Fruit and vegetable consumption is linked to a lower risk of early death for dialysis patients. This is the University of Bari in Italy and the University of Sydney in Australia. A new study found that higher consumption of fruits and vegetables may be associated with a lower risk of premature death in patients undergoing maintenance hemodialysis. The findings, which appear in the upcoming issue of the Clinical Journal of the American Society of Nephrology, and this is the official journal of all the nephrologists, kidney specialists, suggest that this is an important dietary recommendation. Higher fruits, higher vegetable intake is linked with lower cardiovascular and all-cause mortality in the general population, but kidney failure patients on hemodialysis are often discouraged from this type of diet due to its potential to cause a buildup of potassium, which is normally excreted in the urine. So this flies in the face of what many of the previous findings have been led. And there were 8,078 people in this particular study. So it's good. And fasting ramps up the human metabolism. This is Okinawa Institute of Science and Technology. And they're talking about fasting. And fasting means that you're not having any solid food. You can liquefy your food. You can have juices. You can have a protein shake. But fasting helps people lose weight. But new research suggests going without food may also boost your human metabolic activity and generate antioxidants and help reverse some of the effects of aging. So this is a big deal. This was also at Kyoto University, and this was also at the Okinawa Institute of Science and Technology Graduate University. And they identified 30 previously unreported substances whose quality increases during fasting and indicates a variety of health benefits. So we know that caloric intake is the single most proven anti-aging therapy we can use. When you simply cut back on all the excess empty calories, the French fries, the bread, the pretzels, the potato chips, the things that we eat on a regular basis, the white rice, pastas. So when you're able to control your caloric intake, that lengthens your telomeres, the end cap proteins on chromosomes, and that increases your lifespan. So when you're on a healthy plant-based diet and you're juicing, you're going to be more often than not really at the perfect point in caloric intake. So this can help aging. It can help your metabolism, and it helps your immune system. This was published in the current issue of Scientific Reports. It also helped your plasma level and red blood cells, and that's good. Also, there's a finding that exercise benefits the brains. Now, I've mentioned twice in the last week how exercise is good for us. This is from the University of Maryland. And what it's saying in this study is that exercise training alters blood flow to the brain and improves cognitive performance as you're aging. And a new study published by the University of Maryland School of Public Health and published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease showed that exercise was associated with an improved brain function in a group of adults diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment and a decrease in blood flow to key regions of the brain. And just so you understand, a reduction in blood flow may seem a little contrary to what you would assume happens after going on an exercise program. But after 12 weeks of exercise, adults with this condition experience decreases in cerebral blood flow, and they simultaneously improve significantly in their scores on cognitive tests. And Dr. Smith explained that for those beginning to experience subtle memory loss, the brain is in crisis mode. It may try to compensate for the inability to function optimally by increasing cerebral blood flow. And while elevated cerebral blood flow is usually considered beneficial to brain functioning, there's evidence to suggest it may actually be a harbinger of further memory loss in those designated with this condition. So exercise, one of the best single things you can do for your brain. And if you have a child with autism, according to a new study published in Scientific Reports and just out from Ben-Gurion University in Negev, and also Soroka University Medical Center, they're showing that cannabis relieves symptoms of autism. That's good. And also for those of you who have Alzheimer's, from two universities, University of North Dakota and Louisiana State University, a study on hyperbaric oxygen therapy improves Alzheimer's disease. Now, that means it would also improve dementia and multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, and ALS. And it's hard sometimes to get a center to agree to be treated with hyperbaric. But if you can get such a center, it's very beneficial. And from the University of Gajah Mada, which is in Indonesia, there is a common vegetable there, but not here, called chayote, C-H-A-Y-O-T-E. And it belongs to the gourd family, and it's very mild flavor, and it's used in a lot of different dishes, and it also is able to use to treat skin cancer. And the study was done at the university, and it showed substantial improvement. Once again, something natural was used against melanoma, malignant melanoma, and that's a type of very severe malignant skin cancer that spreads rapidly. And according to the World Health Organization, there are at least 3,300 new melanoma cases reported annually just in Indonesia, where they get a lot of sun there. And melanoma may appear on normal skin or start from a mole. However, people don't always notice how a normal mole changes into melanoma, which can result in unreported or undiagnosed cases. So this is one thing that can make a difference and help. And that's what we want to do. By the way, from the American Heart Association, nearly 121 million adults in the United States have some type of cardiovascular disease. That's according to them, and that was published in their journal Circulation. 121 million. Now, add in all the people who are overweight, add all the people who are diabetic, and you see why two-thirds of the American population are sick and their life is at risk. Cardiovascular disease remains the leading cause of death globally. So that's something that we can prevent and we can reverse. And that didn't even count the number of children who are suffering from heart disease, too. So, and McMaster's University and McGill University and the University of Ottawa, three universities just published a story together in evidence-based mental health showing that mindfulness meditation, what my guest yesterday was talking about will help ease chronic pain. Three separate analyses. It can lessen the severity and the impact on daily life of chronic pain, as well as the accompanying distress that was in their findings. So even though Wikipedia and the skeptics don't believe any of this, don't you believe them. And I'm doing a really strong article about that. You'll hear it on the show next week. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to go directly to your calls. Then I'm going to play a tape, and this is a tape that really is a part of this whole scourge of identity politics. I'm a big believer that men and women should be working together, not superior and inferior, but equal in respect, in the not just the ability to work together, but also to acknowledge each other's uniqueness. I've worked with a lot of spiritual feminists. I also work with some of the second waves feminists, like Barbara Seaman. She and I wrote a very definitive book on feminine health back in the 1980s. So in fact, at my book signing for that book, over 250 acknowledged feminist authors came, and it took 2 hours just to acknowledge all of them. But I am not supportive of those individuals, male or female, who use the label feminist in order to attack people, that it's all about male-hating or male-bashing. That's not how we grow. I would like to see the real spiritual feminist, people like Vandana Shiva, Marianne Williamson, Charlene Spretnik, Jean Bolin, Elizabeth Satoris, a wonderful human being, a biological scientist, deeply involved in earth spirituality. I remember going to California to interview her and film her. And I'm going to be filming her again for the new film on the earth, Saving the Planet. Angel Toya Williams, an African-American Zen Roshi, black feminist, working in the inner cities. But you don't see her. You don't hear from Reverend Sally Bingham, an Episcopal priest out in San Francisco, founder of the Regeneration Project. Lynn Twist, Joan Halifax, Joan Borshenko, medical doctor, and Karen Baker Fletcher, and Dr. Christine Northrup, both empowering women in their spiritual ways of living, but also through natural health means, and Reverend Jetsuma Palmo, British Tibetan Buddhist nun, working to educate tribal girls throughout the Himalayan region, and Anat Hoffman, chair of the Women for the Wall, Israel's women feminist group trying to bring gender equality in Judaism, and Winona LaDuke, Native American eco-feminist activist, and Sister Elizabeth McClaster, who is the partner of Father Philip Berrigan, and Sharon Salzberg, and Rabbi Sharon Kleinbaum, spiritual teacher to a group within the LGBT synagogue movement, Daisy Kahn, founder of the Women's Islamic Initiative on Spirituality and Equality to Empower Muslim Women, and Starhawk, longtime leader of the eco-feminist and feminist neo-pagan movement. So those are just a few of hundreds of people that I believe should be the wise women coming forward for the political parties, and especially the Democratic Socialist parties. I believe there's some idealists there. I don't believe they have the depth of knowledge. I'm going to be helping them. I'm writing an article that I'm publishing next week, giving you an absolute detailed blueprint of how to have universal health care where we actually save trillions instead of it costing us anything. So I'll have that laid out so it won't be a burden. And what the left and right both have wrong because they don't have the scholarship. I'll be presenting the scholarship next week on that. And if it's for everyone, please share it, because it will give you the actual figures of how much we can save and how universal health care can actually work. So I hope people in this audience will share it widely. Now, when you see identity politics, just be aware that they do not speak for everyone. They speak for themselves. That's their right. But we shouldn't have people who are based on hate being popularized in a movement when wise voices are not invited to any form, and they should be. We're going to play that clip in just a few minutes. Take a break, come back with your questions.
Hey, Gary, greetings from the Lonely Vegan. And I say that because I'm the only vegan that I know. I've been a vegan now for 5 years. I don't live in a major city. So I haven't, you know, met any other vegans. Not that that really matters to me, but what's interesting is I go out to eat a lot for business, whether it's lunches, dinners. I do a lot of banquets that I'm at. And for a while I was ordering a vegetarian plate. It always came smothered with cheese, so then I would say, oh, I have a vegan plate, got to describe what I wanted. And then all of a sudden the questions would come at me. Why? And, I felt challenged sometimes by people, or they just got weird around me. So that's one thing I'd like you to see if you could comment on. And then, you know, the other thing is I go to a vegan restaurant near me, and it's absolutely fantastic, and yet the owners there are not vegans themselves. So, I don't know, just wondering what your thoughts are on all this. It's doesn't seem to add up, but anyway, thank you so much for your great work and your show. Appreciate it.
I'm going to answer you in two ways. One is philosophical, and one is pragmatic. I'm sure you're familiar with Emily Dickinson. She wrote, "Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without words and never stops at all." The fact that you are a vegan, and at this time in your life, or for the past 5 years, you have been alone, doesn't mean that you are not in alignment with the higher spiritual energies of life. You're honoring and respecting the sentient beings, the lambs that should have their legs instead of eating a leg of lamb, the veal that should be suckling on the mother instead of being in a box, a crate, deprived of milk so that the anemia creates a white flesh and can be slaughtered so people can have their veal parmesan. You're conscious of this. That's why, in part, you became a vegan. You're also more aware of the environment. You understand that anywhere from 18% of all of our carbon emissions, the methane emissions, come from animals, and 30% comes from factory farming together as a total. So that's one-third nearly of all of our causes of carbon dioxide or global warming is something within our control. Do we have the will, the personal individual will, to say no? Protecting and honoring sentient life, protecting the environment for all of us, is more important than my desire to have a piece particle of food that is contributing to this. I mentioned recently, and I wrote an article, and in the article, and it's really worth going up to read, it's on prn.fm, there are six articles recently written, and I argue in there that we have the means to stop many things happening bad in the environment. Some things we cannot stop, they're tipping. It doesn't mean the world will end in 12 years, it will not. It means that if we do not address these issues within that 10-year period, then we cannot change the consequences of what will be happening with unusual or exceptional weather events that we're seeing right now. I mean, we just saw the coldest day ever in the continental United States yesterday. That will be the new norm. And we had two hurricanes, Category 4, only a couple miles an hour less than Category 5, happened in Florida within 12 months. Now that will be a new norm, and it'll be Category 5s blended in there and hitting major cities. At what point, after natural disasters, do you awaken from what I call intentional neglect, where you intend not to know something? It was the father of Gestalt therapy, Fritz Perl, who said a fear of knowing is a fear of doing. Congratulations to you, because you've taken a step through your fear. And freedom requires two steps, freedom from, then freedom for. So you're for the environment, you're for rights, you're for health, all of which will benefit you personally. It is not for you to convince other people, nor me to convince other people. Yesterday I received in the mail, I'm on location, I received two new books. And I looked through them briefly because my day was packed. But one of the people on set said, could I take a look? I said, sure. And the person was looking and they kept going, wow, wow, wow. And this is vegan? I said, yeah, that's vegan. It looks like something out of Gourmet magazine. I said, we have to take veganism not just at the level that it's helping the environment, but we have to also take it to the level that it's helping us evolve back to our spiritual self instead of evolving or de-evolving through maladaptation to a level where everyone else does it. Or what's wrong with you? Are you one of those strange people? I grew up with that. I grew up the only vegan in my entire hometown. And I was mocked and ridiculed, sometimes to my face, other times behind my back, sometimes jokingly, in which case you just, you know, they're your friends and family and just laugh with them and you don't take it personally. They're all dead. They're all dead. In fact, just last week a friend of mine died. And here's what's interesting. You talk about eating out. For my entire time in New York City, I believe that if you're a friend, you should engage that friendship. A friend only exists if you share with them. Friends. So I would get together and we'd go to movies or go to an off-Broadway play or off-Broadway play or sometimes a Broadway play. We'd always have a meal. And I always tried to select a restaurant that had a healthy menu. I was the only one that was eating healthy of all my friends. But they made it clear, Gary, that's your choice, but these are our choices. And never once in 45 years of having dinner every week with Marty Feldman, did I ever question what he was eating. Now, Marty was accommodating in that he would sometimes eat healthy, but he wasn't happy about it because I don't think Marty ever had a morsel of food in his refrigerator. In fact, one time he showed me his refrigerator and it wasn't even plugged in. Every single milk came from a deli or a Chinese restaurant. You can imagine the quality of the food. But now, one of my friends who three times in the last 10 years called me in critical care, near death, from congestive heart failure, and will you help me? And I jumped in, and I pulled him back. He lost 125 pounds. His blood sugar went from 500 down to 80. Blood pressure was off the charts, down to normal. And yet on his own, he would go right back to his conditioned epigenetic self. So if he was taking people out to dinner, he would always eat unhealthy foods. And the last time he spoke to me, he was in an emergency, in critical care, and they didn't expect him to live through the night. This is early in the morning. So, late at night, early in the morning. And so he called, and he could barely talk, but I put into motion everything I could do, and it saved him. And I said, you've had three times you've been at death's door. Three times you put yourself there. He's, I know. You know, well, what do you have to live for? And why is that not more important than these self-indulgences? He didn't have an answer. His name was Tom Larson. And I'm sure people in this audience knew him. And he was a friend. Tom would always pick up the check if I didn't. And sometimes he'd say, well, here, Gary, I'll get the tip. I said, okay. and we would have sometimes 10, 12 of us. And do you want to know which of those people have died? Virginia Reed and Tom Croft and George Marcus and Ron McCulty and Manette Loudon, Michael Elner, Neil Kramer, Morty Jacobs. These are all wonderful human beings. Wonderful human beings. I was blessed to have them as friends, including Tom Larson. But they weren't making the choices they needed to make to keep themselves healthy. And that's the importance. Other friends of mine, my brother Stephen and Steve Brown, and they have made positive choices. Other men and women, Nancy and Jody and Luann, they've made positive choices. See, here you got a combination. Some people make healthy choices and they're healthy. Other people choose to allow their conditioned self to dominate what they eat, and they're sick or dead. And no matter how many times you try to talk with those people out of making a bad choice because they're close to you and you care about them, including your own family members, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, you must always recognize that you have no right to dictate what they should eat, even if you are right. You must allow freedom of choice. And that's one of the most painful lessons in life, is to see someone who knows better, is smarter than the choice they're making, kill themselves with their knife and fork. So don't be concerned about convincing anyone. And one last thing. Early on in my career, I was invited to debate. And I guess because I was this country bumpkin and naive and not all that bright and about the world, what do you know when you grow up in a little tiny town, that everything is very local. So these were worldly people with MD degrees, and yet in the debates, they weren't faring well because they were using the pure power of their authority to dictate that they should win. You should believe them simply because they're a medical doctor, a PhD. I couldn't compete at that level. I didn't have that education at that point in my life. I just used common sense and reason. And in time, about 5 years, they stopped debating. Now imagine those of us who've tried to share the good science, the gold standard science, peer-reviewed literature, the very things I talk about every single day on this program, I have my entire career. So it's not a lack of science, it's not a lack of awareness, it's not a lack of truths that prevent people from making choices. It's not a lack, I didn't know. You mean smoking was bad? You mean carried a cocked and loaded gun in my underwear was foolish? Yeah, I think it's foolish. Well, no one told me not to. And you think, wow, is this pure, unbridled lack of awareness? Was there something else involved here? I've never changed anyone's mind. Not one. What I've done is I've helped facilitate change in people who said, can you help me better understand something? I don't have the tools or the support system to make the changes I want. Can you help me there? In which case you say yes. And then you see positive changes. So next time you go out, don't worry about what people think of you, because you're not having plaque build up in your arteries. You're not having your blood pressure increased. You're not having acute constipation where they could read an entire phone book and not have a movement. You're the one who's going to be healthy at the end of the day. Okay? And there are other vegans out there. I'm sure you just haven't reached out to them. We'll take one more call. Go ahead, please.
Hi, this is a question for Gary Noll. What can a person do to lower their blood pressure?
Well, that's that's a very common theme, high blood pressure in our society. And for those of you who are not aware of it, your heart has to pump very hard to get blood through your arteries and back up through the veins. And this exerts a pressure, and the pressure is against the walls of the blood vessels. So when you have an elevated blood pressure, when you have too much sodium in the diet, then you end up with too much pressure by the heart working awfully hard to get adequate amounts of the blood to circulate through your entire body. And then the blood pressure is represented by two numbers, systolic pressure, which is the pressure exerted by the blood when the heart beats, forcing blood into the blood vessels, and that reading indicates blood pressure at its highest, and the second reading is the diastolic pressure, which is recorded when the heart is at rest in between beats. And what you want is you want a good blood pressure. A normal blood pressure would be 120, which is your systolic, over a lower 80 diastolic blood pressure, or 120 over 80. I believe it should be lower. And then your pre-hypertension, generally 120 over 129. And then when you have hypertension, it's 140 over 159. And then really, really bad is 160. And I've seen a lot of 160 over 100. And generally, they give you medication to lower it. It has a lot of side effects. If you just looked at what you could do to get rid of all the excess sodium in the diet and fried foods, go on a healthy plant-based diet, but calcium and magnesium at the same amount, about 1,000 milligrams to 1,500, because deficiencies of either will lead to high blood pressure. And one of the most important nutrients is potassium. A banana has potassium, but coconut water has more potassium, almost three times more. And that's important. Coenzyme Q10 improves heart function. And if you have high blood pressure, now I'm not going to give you amounts because if I don't want anyone self-medicating, but if you get into the hands of a qualified holistic nurse, holistic chiropractor, holistic physician, then they can guide you of how much ubiquinol you should take, but it really has helped you. Also, coenzyme A, and coenzyme A works effectively with coenzyme Q10 to support your immune system and detoxification. And those are very, very important. Those are your top nutrients. Then the essential fatty acids. I would suggest black currant seed oil, flaxseed oil, olive oil, primrose oil. Those are good. Garlic is terrific at lowering blood pressure. L-arginine also lowers blood pressure. L-carnitine is great for the heart because it gives transports long-chain fatty acids to the heart. It makes it easier for the heart to function. Vitamin E, something I mentioned earlier, that is also good, generally at 200 units and up. An octocosanol, octa, O-C-T-A, cosanol, C-O-S-A-N-O-L, that's terrific also for your heart. Vitamin C is a superstar. It improves your adrenal function and reduces blood clotting. And bromelain is an enzyme that digests fat. It's good for you. Chinese red yeast rice extract, because generally when people have high blood pressure, they frequently have high cholesterol. That brings that down. And then maitake mushrooms would be good. Proteolytic enzymes, I would suggest, a B-complex of 100 milligrams. And then every day, three times a day, take cayenne at high heat, one capsule. Why? Because cayenne has what is called capsicum, C-A-P-S-I-C-U-M. And that is great for stimulating circulation and lowering blood pressure, turning off pain too. Hawthorn berries, that's terrific. And rosemary is great for high blood pressure. Hops and flurry root are good, but mainly for keeping you calm and high-fiber diet. Hope that works. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. I'm going to hold a couple of my audio clips for our next program because I don't want to run short with my guest, Professor Brian Hooker, H-O-O-K-E-R. He's in Redding, California. He's an associate professor of biology at Simpson University in California, and he's a senior consultant for ARES, A-R-E-S Corporation, specializing in environmental restoration design. And Brian is one of the leaders and board members in the organization Focus Autism, which is investigating the scientific evidence for a vaccine-autism connection. He also has a son with autism and has been active in the autism community for over a decade. And over the years, he has filed many Freedom of Information Act requests with the federal agencies and has received thousands of pages of documents that support the need to question the efficacy and safety of vaccination. He was the independent point researcher in the whistleblowing case of the CDC's Dr. William Thompson, and which was featured in the film Vaxxed, and he holds degrees from California State Polytech University and a doctorate in biochemical engineering from Washington State University, and his website is focusautism.org. Nice to have you with us today, Brian.
Good to be with you, Gary. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Brian, there's a couple different points I would like for you to address, please. One is, right now, there's a full-out campaign. It started in Australia, but it's now coming to the United States, where the World Health Organization and the state's health departments are trying to make it out that anyone who questions the safety and efficacy or need for vaccines is a public danger. In fact, we are considered major dangers. And they have actually made it against the law in Australia to question the safety and efficacy of vaccines. And one of the leading proponents of questioning vaccines was not allowed to talk. They were banned in Australia from talking. Fortunately, the Internet has not yet been banned in Australia. So our articles on questioning vaccines, and Richard Gale and I have written over 52 of them and 5 documentaries, the latest being the multi-award-winning documentary. In fact, it won over 44 awards last year on the dangers of vaccines. Tell us about the effort underway now using AstroTurf groups, front organizations, and doctors for hire from the pharmaceutical industry to try to demonize anyone and everyone, no matter what your credentials and no matter what your proof, that vaccines are dangerous. They don't want anyone challenging vaccines. Number two, you were challenged for speaking with Dr. Thompson and then writing about it. You wrote an article that was published in a peer-reviewed literature. They then managed to get that article rescinded, but I understand you have rewritten that article. And tell us the politics behind removing it and then the good science getting it republished again with new findings that this audience should be aware of. The form is yours.
Okay, great. The effort to vilify and demonize and really squelch any type of debate regarding vaccine safety, if you indeed question vaccine safety as a scientist and also follow good science, it's disheartening, it's discouraging, it's very, very real. We are fortunate to have a Bill of Rights in the United States. They don't have that in Australia. They don't have free speech in Australia, and so it's extremely demoralizing, but not unexpected that that type of speech would be suppressed by the Australian government. And it's here in the United States as well, as major social media outlets are now really trying to clamp down on anybody that presents a balanced viewpoint regarding vaccine safety. For example, Pinterest has, which is one of the social media outlets that is very popular, now takes down anything that they claim has an anti-vaccination message. And I think that's coming for other platforms. There's legislation in California, that was legislation introduced last year in California in order to limit social media news outlets for you know, they're basically fact checkers that in Sacramento want to fact check anything about vaccinations and any other types of scientific articles that went out on social media. And it's just positively ridiculous in light of the mandates that are now being pushed through at the state level in order to remove things like the personal belief exemption for vaccination and the religious exemption for vaccination for school attendance. It is so difficult now to get word out, and it is the AstroTurf groups work overtime. They don't use good science. They use ad hominem attack. They use very, very faulty logic. They use straw man arguments, and they are trying to take down good scientists. And I have to say, Gary, I really appreciate your series on vaccination, and I thank you for being so forthcoming and being so scientifically accurate. I mean, we need to follow the science. I'm a scientist. I have been doing epidemiology for the past 10 years. I've published an epidemiology of about 13 peer-reviewed publications over the past 10 years. And that science has to be done, and we are following the science. And unfortunately, the sort of religion of vaccination has rejected that science at the highest level in both the Australian government and now the U.S. government and the U.S. sort of medical industrial complex. So it's very, very difficult. It's very, very demoralizing. Part of that was my experience when I first published the reanalysis of data that I received from Dr. Thompson. This was CDC data that was the basis for a fraudulent CDC publication that came out on 2004, which denied a link between the MMR vaccine and autism. What I did then, fast forward to 2014, is I published that, I republished the work, and I did show that there was an association between the timing of the MMR vaccine and autism in African American males. Now, politically, when the whistleblower story hit, my publication, which was in a journal called Translational Neurodegeneration, had been out for about a month. But when the whistleblower story broke open at the end of August, then it is my belief, and I cannot prove this, but I do know that CDC's officials, including the director, Thomas Frieden, was trying to find out as much as they could about me as quickly as possible. The same week that Tom Frieden was trying to research me and actually had minions, I FOIA'd this, and he actually had some of his associates in the office of the director of the CDC trying to track down all of my publications, trying to track down my curriculum vitae. Curiously, the same week my publication was taken down off of the internet by the journal Translational Degeneration and was up for review then to be retracted. It was very, very difficult. The publication was ultimately retracted about 6 weeks later from the journal, and I was given no scientific basis whatsoever. The only thing that the journal claimed was that I had an undisclosed conflict of interest regarding my board membership at Focus Autism, which actually was not factual, was not true. And that was the reason that they took the paper down. There was no blaring scientific flaw. There was no really no science dispute with the science whatsoever, except for one of the reviewers didn't necessarily like my statistical methods, although they never claimed that they were invalid. Now, the good thing about that is that 4 years later, I have found a journal, and I did publish that work. I extended that work. And indeed, there is still a relationship between the MMR vaccine, the timing of the MMR vaccine, and autism in African American males. But there is also a really strong relationship between autism and especially those children that got regressive autism. And they tended to get the vaccination much earlier than 18 months of age, versus those children that did not get autism or regressive autism. This has now been published in the Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons. It came out in early December.
Let's take a step back, please, Brian. I'm sure many people in the audience do not understand the power of the message that Dr. William Thompson, a leading vaccine researcher on the seminal vaccine MMR study at the CDC, claiming it was completely safe and nothing related at all to autism, but what he told you in personal conversations, which you recorded, and how that information in and of itself, just that, should completely disintegrate the argument that the MMR vaccine is safe and effective.
Well, over the time that I was in touch with Dr. Thompson before the whistleblower story broke, we had over 40 phone conversations. Most of them lasted over an hour. I recorded the last four phone conversations legally, and those recordings you can actually find it at a website called fearlessparent.org. And at that same time, Dr. Thompson shared over 10,000 pages worth of government documents that showed a collusion to cover up the relationship between vaccines and autism. Not only the MMR vaccine and autism, which was the subject of my republication, but what Dr. Thompson conveyed to me through both phone conversations as well as proof, email correspondences, reports, memoranda, things like that, that the CDC was committed to indemnify vaccines at all costs, despite the fact that they were seeing a strong relationship between vaccines and autism and vaccines and other neurodevelopmental disorders, especially things like tics, which lead to Tourette syndrome, and all other types of chronic childhood illnesses. The CDC was set up basically to indemnify the infant and child vaccination program and make sure that if any science disagreed with that dogma, that it would be squelched.
Well, explain why the African American community in particular should be very concerned because of the percentage of autism spectrum disorder in 36-month-old and younger African-American males, and then explain to me how this is any different than the Tuskegee experiment of institutional racism used against an entire ethnic group.
First of all, there is no difference. What the CDC found was that when African-American males got the MMR vaccine on time, on schedule, as recommended by the CDC, they were over three times more likely to get an autism diagnosis compared to those African-American males that delayed the vaccine until 36 months of age or later. So they knew that there was a statistically significant, it was highly significant, increased risk of autism. They knew this as early as November 2001, and they squelched the results, and they continued to vaccinate children on schedule. They did not recommend any different schedule, and they covered up the result literally by taking all of the paperwork and destroying it. There was a meeting where all of the paperwork that showed the relationship, the strong relationship with the MMR timing in African American males and autism, all that paperwork was shredded. And then all of the computer files were destroyed. And thank God for Dr. Thompson, who kept the records secretly and kept all of his documentation. Otherwise, it would have never seen the light of day. The CDC committed fraud. And when in committing fraud, put hundreds of thousands of African-American males at risk of getting autism. It is the Tuskegee experiment on steroids.
One last final issue here, and that is we have many movements and legitimate movements, but why is it that when we say we believe her with no proof required, no documentation, why is it we don't choose to believe 2 million American women whose babies were normal till they had their vaccines and then de-evolved into autism spectrum disorder or other neurological conditions? Why do we think that all 2 million of those women, A, don't deserve to be believed, and then are one step further, you're then criticizing the same women for, quote, you're not a medical doctor, you don't know the science, you don't know the truth, and many of these women have gone on to educate themselves more than any pediatrician or chemist in the United States about the dangers of these vaccines after the fact. Your thoughts?
We live in a society that is being diluted by the pharmaceutical industry and the pharmaceutical industrial complex, which has basically captured the entire United States Department of Health and Human Services. It's all about the money that Merck, GlaxoSmithKline, Sanofi Pasteur, and others are making, Pfizer are making on vaccinations. It has nothing to do with the health and the safety of children. There is a study, there was a Mawson study that showed that unvaccinated children are much healthier than vaccinated children, and that is in the record. It is standing. It has not yet been retracted. It hasn't been retracted at all, and it's been standing in the open literature, but it is all about the money. And government officials are financially incentivized in order to do that. There is no independence. There is no looking out for the children of the United States. It's basically so we can make more profit for these large pharmaceutical giants.
That's just unconscionable that we should value a pharmaceutical company's profit over a child's life. Well, that's what we're doing, however, and I want to thank you for your good work. And also on our next program, we're going to be having the woman activist who's challenging the mandatory vaccines and home visits, three home visits in Oregon for every new parent. And you can imagine how Orwellian this is and how in violation of our constitutional rights this is, where you have a baby, the state comes in and sees whether or not you're vaccinating. If not, they can put you up to child protective services, and then your child could go into foster care, and you could be challenged as an endangerment to your own baby, even if you're highly educated, even if you're a medical doctor, even if you're a scientist, and you are not choosing to vaccinate for some reason. They don't care. It's one size fits all. You either comply or you're an enemy of the state. That is scary or should be concerned with people, not just those who are pregnant, but all people. Thank you very much, Brian, for being on and sharing your insights.
Thank you, Gary, for your bravery and for your commitment to the truth.
Well, I got a couple new articles coming out on vaccines next week, and I'll send them to you. Dr. Brian Hooker, Professor Brian Hooker, out in Reading, Pennsylvania, whose own son was vaccine damaged, and so he's using all of his skills to show the truth, and he's the one who opened that whole Pandora's box of top scientists at the CDC saying to him and proving to him that there was a conspiracy to defraud the American public. Why aren't those people brought before Congress? Why aren't they being investigated by the Justice Department? Selective prosecution, if you're with the pharmaceutical industry, you're somehow exempt. That shouldn't be existing. Have a nice day, everyone.